Duke Ellington, Charlie Mingus, Max Roach, all flexing their post-bop avant-garde jazz muscles with this nifty little number called Money Jungle. It's the title track, in fact, of their collaborative effort in 1962. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And we're going to turn back to our discussion yesterday to start off, our discussion about the Democratic Party and also about Bernie Sanders. And we'll talk later in the program about Bill O'Reilly. DNC Chairman Tom Perez's new Democratic Party didn't come together and fight back for John Ossoff, a first-time candidate who, with some party backing, would have won Georgia's 6th congressional district seat outright in a special election. The seat became vacant when Republican Tom Price became President Trump's Secretary of Health and Human Services. Ossoff stunned the political establishment with 48.1% of the vote, just shy of the 50% needed to avoid a runoff in June. Capturing this Republican congressional seat and the more than 1,000 others the Democrats lost at the state, local, and federal levels in the 2016 Trump tidal wave should have been a number one priority for the Democratic Party. One would think that helping candidates with near certain victories would be a great way to come together and fight back. But of course, this does not seem to be happening. And that's where we're going today in the first half of the program. What is it with this party? I mean, what is it that they don't understand? If you are and have been a major party, you're half of the duopoly, you would think you'd be really, really on top of this political game. You can't afford to miss opportunities to get more people elected, to shore up the power and clout of your party. If you're in the political business, this is how it works. But my goodness, even at with the Trump slaughter of 2016, the party was as if it had no momentum other than to say, yeah, Hillary, 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 Hillary. It was just one person. The whole party was just about this one person, and we saw what happened there. But the party does not give any indication that it actually has a broad or broader view. And here we have this young man in the district. This was, as I said, whose seat was this? This was the 6th congressional district seat, and this seat was of strategic value to the Republicans. Wouldn't that have been a very good indication that it should also have been of great value to the Democrats? Go get it. Well, they didn't support, really, John Ossoff. He's a young man with some ideas. He has had a brief history with activism. And he, in his first try, now, I remind you, this is Tom Price's seat. Tom Price is now President Trump's Secretary of Health and Human Services. In his first run, he gets 48.1% of the vote. That is stunning. It's not like he was a household name. It's not like he came out of a ton of money. He was a regular grassroots guy. And it was a sure bet that this after Price, it would go to some other Republican. The next highest number of votes was something like 19%, and that was the Republican candidate in this race. So apart from the fact that this was a stunning run, it is also a sad commentary that he has to go through a runoff in June. That should not have been the case at all. He should have come to the attention of the Democratic Party as somebody who, if we just push a little bit, he has done all this work. All the people who support him, they've done all this work to organize a political base for a first-time candidate seeking to capture the seat left vacant by Tom Price's appointment to Health and Human Services in the Trump administration. And there is, maybe I'm wrong, if I'm wrong, somebody please tell me, but there is no indication of a sustained supporting effort by the party under whose umbrella this young man is running. This is amazing. And what's even more amazing is that he isn't the only one. Now, we all agree that the Democratic Party was slaughtered. They were just slaughtered by the Republican machine. Donald Trump's candidacy basically decapitated the Republican Party. It was a brutal, brutal thing that just happened in the last election. So you would think that this party would be all fired up when they see that there's a possibility of in several different states. Well, certainly the seats of all of the cabinet members are up. But is there evidence that the party invested in developing a Democratic stronghold to sustain Democratic candidates in these places where they know seats are going to become available? And they should know that the job is to get these people, especially those who are promising candidates, to give them a little jolt, to give them a little help, so that their candidacies would not be in vain. And this would now add to the collective clout of the Democratic Party, certainly in Congress, where they've just been slaughtered, as I said, but across the country. They lost more than 1,000 seats. And we know that whatever the resources that the Democratic Party had, I mean, all of that oxygen was consumed by Hillary Clinton. And the Democratic Party should have known, because the writing was on the wall, that she was not going to run. It's coming out now in this new book that is out, and the new effort is to find out who told the bad stories about Hillary Clinton. No, the question, I mean, you're done, you're gone, goodbye. But let's look at what the Democratic Party failed to do. And this is an inexcusable failure. I don't care how tough it has been for the Democratic Party. The reality is you lost more than 1,000 seats across the board. You need every inch of ground that you could gain. Explain to me why in these special elections, where many people, many Democrats, stand a pretty good chance, you're not there. you're not rendering support, not even to say, well, we're having a little rally and we're showing up for Joe Doakes. Joe Doakes, we think, will make a great candidate. Let's just say, well, you're out of cash. The party can't give candidates cash. They'll have to raise their own. But, geez, you could show up. You could have some kind of a little reception. But, of course, Hillary Clinton depleted all of that. When Tom Perez and his sidekick, Keith Ellison, were given, we talked about it, were given, quote, leadership of this Democratic Party, they had nothing to really work with. They didn't have money in a bank account. They didn't have a staff. In fact, we're waiting to see, because Tom Perez demanded resignations of everybody. And they're supposed to have new people in place by April the 15th. Well, my calendar says it's the 20th. And we have across the nation, and especially in the South, you have quite a few seats that are being contested by seemingly capable candidates who could use some help to capture these seats for the party. I mean, this is pure party politics. This is nothing, you know, you're not siding with anybody. But just from what is being produced, like this young man, John Ossoff, that is, in my view, a very, very attractive investment for the party to make. Lift him up. Help him capture that seat. For one thing, it's not one of those little mealy-mouthed kind of seats. If it was good enough for Tom Price, it's good enough for anybody else. And in his first run, to get 48.1% of the vote when you started from, you know, zippity-doo-dah, you have no cash, all you have is guts. And you can turn in 48.1% of the vote in your first run. The first question to be asked is, where is your party with you? How much money are they contributing? That is a sure bet. And you have quite a few others like it. In these special elections, and certainly in the new elections that are to be held, you know, according to the cycle, in 2018. But you have special elections being run all over the country because people have left them to join the Trump administration. We have a Democratic Party that doesn't seem to know that this is going on. And in this case, I choose this case because it is so stark. It is so obvious that the party has fallen down on the job. And it really needs to subject itself to an internal audit to answer the question, how is it that this young man did not benefit the way he ought to have from the party's support? You're playing games. And yet you're on the road championing this new concept, this new idea that you're pushing about coming together and taking on the administration, fighting the administration. Now, this raises again, once again, the question of Mr. Sanders. Just what kind of political being is he? This is one of the cases in which he would have been happy, or should have been happy, to involve himself in pushing candidates who can do something or who deserve to be given a chance to do something. He was not involved. In fact, you know, I read today a very interesting piece, I believe it was in the Washington Post, asking questions, the questions we asked so long ago. What is the deal with Bernie Sanders? I mean, what kind of animal is he? Is he pure independent? Is he a hybrid? What exactly is the nature of his political identity? They said that they find that he has some questions to answer because he's kind of strange. He's a strange political person who has not yet made it clear as to where he stands. I mean, he talks about things. Like right now on this tour, he is talking the talk of a semi, quasi, sort of kind of independent guy still, but having a special arrangement with the Democratic Party in which he can kind of switch out at any time and switch back in at any time. He has, you know, a very interesting arrangement with the Democratic Party, but he makes it plain he's not a Democrat. He makes it plain he's not a liberal. But that's okay. I'm not concerned about what you're not. I'm concerned about what you are, but you're not saying. You're sounding good. You're very popular. But you have not made it really clear. I don't care what happens to the Democratic Party as a result of their choosing to affiliate or to have Bernie Sanders affiliate with the party. I'm interested, however, in Sanders himself being subjected to certain kinds of questions so that innocent people are not misguided and are not conned into switching sides or moving away from their original political orientation because they're hearing these interesting words from Bernie Sanders. We know that this is a false flag operation. We know also that Bernie Sanders has pulled a bait and switch a couple of times. And perhaps it's not a bad thing that he did not reach out to John Ossoff in Georgia and try to help him succeed. That speaks to me as a kind of, I don't know what the exact word would be, but it is not an act of generosity. Look, if I'm in a party, and the party that I'm in is in a terrible state, which the Democratic Party is, it's in a terrible state. In as much as I'm allowed to operate under its aegis and benefit from a couple of things that the Democratic Party is still good for, that Bernie Sanders does not have, which is an organizational structure, a national organizational structure, and there are other perks for him to maintain this kind of an amorphous nature with the party. So he can't be held responsible for anything specific. You know, he's an in-and-out kind of guy. He's going with the flow, and he's firing up people. But for whom, for which party, we don't know, and for what purpose, we don't know yet, because Sanders has not declared his intentions. But we're going based on his actions, and we're reading into his actions where he may likely go. which is a kind of contest here, where mutual suspicion. Sanders comes and he hits the road with Tom Perez so as to indicate, I am doing my duty. I'm paying my tribute to the Democratic Party. Because as the sole independent in Congress, I have no structure. I have no infrastructure that could independently sustain my candidacy. Okay. So in exchange for that, I will do the dog and pony show. I will still maintain my identity, my political identity, which I don't understand the Democratic Party agreeing to that. I will still caucus with the Democrats and benefit from their organizational structure. Okay, got it. But at some point, he has got to be called out. He has got to name his game. He can't be this amorphous kind of character who could be anything at any time. And I still say that this particular race for the 6th Congressional District in Georgia further begs the question, how come you're not in it to propel other people's candidacies? Give them a hand. That would be a generous thing to do. And if we were to apply the thinking that you profess out loud about coming together and fighting, you know, being part of this resistance and all of that kind of stuff, here was an example where you should have made your political agenda plain. You come to somebody you see has a great possibility of winning. You have nothing to lose. The party is not doing it, and you're not doing it. So I'm saying it's time again. I've been saying this for quite a while. We got to get some definitive responses from Brother Bernie. Because we don't know what his agenda is. This party, the Democratic Party, once again has proven that it is of limited utility. It's burnt out. Its resources pretty much are gone. I don't hear anybody saying, hey, how did this happen? When so much money was raised to support Hillary Clinton and her presidential candidacy. I don't understand that. How you can have a major party, and of course this is exactly the time they would hand the leadership over to a Dominican guy and a black guy who's Muslim. Yeah. Come in and do the impossible. You might as well give them a toothbrush and have them perform the miracle of cleaning the entire Empire State Building. That's when they hand over control to things, when they're damn near useless. You have no money, so why are you accepting this leadership? You have no resources. They've given you none. Your job is to, again, enlist your respective political bases in the African American and Latino community to rebuild this useless party, to make it something, to make something out of nothing. And when it becomes something, the old order will step in and proceed as before. Where the party is right now, it's useless. It could say whatever it wants to say, but it's not scoring points really in Congress, either in the Senate or in the House. It is not advancing legislation. legislation and winning at it. It is not spawning a new generation of leadership that it is committed to supporting. So what's the point of the party? And it's harboring, it's harboring a very questionable, it's hosting a very questionable person close to its vest. So all of these suggest that you need to be real careful right now in your political choices and operate, in effect, as a free agent. Exercise your political will as you see fit. Have no permanent ties with any political organization that cannot demonstrate these basic things, a commitment to new leadership. I mean, just support. It would have been such a wonderful thing. And this is so symbolic. To push this guy, push him over the hurdle. It has nothing to do with whether you like him or you think he's a great guy. The idea is you need to win a seat. And this was not a bad seat at all. You would be capturing Tom Price's old seat, which means you are going up against an entrenched Republican system. And this guy was able to do it literally. He would have done it completely in one fell swoop as a total newcomer to politics. How you like that? And nobody saw fit to say, hey, let's throw a party, a fundraising party. Let's make a speech. Let 10 of us go down there and help get the word out that this is somebody we're watching. This is a new generation of leadership. He comes so close to doing it outright. 48.1% of the vote. And the Democratic Party establishment has nothing to do with it. I'll take this break and come back and talk about, that guy right after this. Listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead. Multiple substantiated sexual harassment complaints against him brought commentator Bill O'Reilly's association with Fox News officially to an end just yesterday. But the question I'm asking is, was he fired? The language that I see being used to describe why O'Reilly is no longer at Fox News is both imprecise, deliberately imprecise, and interesting. We see some interesting examples here in some of the news headlines and the way they're expressing this development, which they are acknowledging as a major development in the world of media. You know, they say things like, he was pushed out, forced to leave. Very interesting things, not fired. He wasn't fired. They're reluctant to use the word fired, which says to me that there's some other kind of arrangement here. And we ought to know what that arrangement has been and still might be. Well, of course, you could fire an employee as a term of, as a condition of employment. The employer has a right to fire you on the basis of a number of things. It could be fired. But it doesn't seem like he was fired. It seems that there was a special accommodation here that people probably don't know about, including me. So I think we need to ask the question, was Bill O'Reilly fired? My thinking is Bill O'Reilly and Bill O'Reilly's relationship to Fox News was a business-to-business relationship. He was not, I believe, he was not an employee of Fox News. He was a partner with Fox News, in a sense. He was an associate, a business associate. Because Bill O'Reilly, don't get it twisted, was his own corporation. He was his own corporation. That's how these mega stars operate. They're not going to work for any major media corporation as an individual, which is in a sense as any other schlub, as any other employee. No, 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 no. They are a corporation. Bill O'Reilly was a corporation. And so his corporation was not an employee of another corporation. His corporation was a business associate with Fox News. And in that arrangement, Fox News couldn't just out and out fire him. Fox News would have to come to terms with the business arrangement that they had. And so, according to the business arrangement that they have, they would have to have special clauses and special provisions for things like moral turpitude on the part of the principal of one business and the other. So on the part of Bill O'Reilly, his conduct might be a provision of the terms of the agreement that his business has had with Fox, which means that Fox does not have immediate, Fox can't take immediate action, direct action against him. Fox would have to go through a series of business arrangements because they are two businesses operating with each other. Now, if it were some other person, you know, working at Fox, you could be fired right away. Empty your desk in 20 minutes, and the security would escort you out. That's not what happened here. Which brings a different perspective on these allegations of sexual harassment against Bill O'Reilly by these women. Now, if Bill O'Reilly were an employee, just as perhaps, let's say, some of the women might have been or were to have been, being regulated and even in their conduct by Fox directly, that would have been an easy matter. But it wasn't an easy matter. And here's why. The women agreed to take their complaints, although they did so initially under the human resources aegis of Fox News, they didn't proceed with it under Fox News. Except up to a certain point. The correct thing would have been to use their complaints or to file their complaints with Fox News and with Bill O'Reilly's corporation, but they have not proceeded to court. These are criminal offenses. And whether they are dealt with internally or dealt with in the context of some kind of transaction involving both companies, that doesn't mean their rights begin and end there. We haven't heard of any further action outside of this arena that the woman had made. And I suspect that that was because the furthest that they were willing to go is settlement. They were not willing to go to court. So see, I'm not buying it that Bill O'Reilly was fired. I am believing, instead, that accommodations were made. Because Bill O'Reilly is not an employee of Fox News. He has his own company. I mean, I'm hoping that the women, in particular, the women, proceeded not only through the internal mechanisms that are available to them, but that they had intended also to go through the court system so that there would be a conviction. And then there would be a price, really a price to pay. But the fact, I believe, they didn't intend to go that route. It's just like many of those families whose loved ones were killed by police. The furthest they're willing to go is settlement, not justice. Settlement. Give me the money that I'm asking for, and I will disappear, and this whole thing would not register as ever having happened. And so now we have to ask some questions about these women. What are you truly interested in justice here, or was it a matter of give me what I'm asking for and I will interpret that as justice? All these feminists. Give me what I want and I'll disappear and I'll be happy and I will agree in writing never to raise this issue ever, ever again. See? When the folks at Fox agree with the person who should be the target of prosecution, it means they have an agreement, a kind of, you know, soul-to-soul agreement. We don't want any trouble. You don't want any trouble. So we are not going to fire you. We instead are going to terminate mutually, they said. They agreed. This was a mutual agreement to terminate their business arrangement. And silly people are running around saying that Bill O'Reilly was fired. It won't show up anywhere that he was fired. They just terminated their mutual business arrangement. That's it. The greatest, and that would be the highest penalty, if you will, that Bill O'Reilly can pay in the circumstance that he's in, within the context and framework that he's operating as a business-to-business entity and arrangement. In a court of law, it would be a whole different thing, but the women didn't go there. And they did not indicate, and have not so far indicated, that that's where they wanted to go. Because this is such an egregious offense, which, by the way, is punishable in a court of law. So you can't fool me about how hurt you were. If you went in this direction, and you went in this direction because all parties had a vested interest in quietly solving this problem without further damage. It was about money. It has nothing to do with improving the character of Bill O'Reilly and teaching him a lesson and teaching Fox a lesson about poor management and making them pay in front of the EEOC for the abysmal management of the situation. Everybody came to terms. So why is this an issue? Why is this a problem? Why is this such big news? The only thing here that is big news is that, hey, after more than 21 years of doing a program and having such a high profile at Fox News, Bill O'Reilly is no longer there and he'll be moving on. So don't try and convince me that this was a firing. If it was a firing, please prove it. Take your questions at 888-874-4888. We have a few minutes remaining. And I always like to get people's ideas and responses to the subjects we discussed. And we've discussed two today. We've discussed the Democratic Party's absentee kind of landlord, not helping people running as Democrats and upholding what they believe is the Democratic ideal. The Democratic Party is not returning the favors. And with regard to Bill O'Reilly, I don't see this as a firing at all. I see this as a false flag media operation. 888-874-4888 is your number to call to just get your two cents in. I want to thank those of you who have sent me these wonderful notes of love and support now that I'm going through a new layer of medical challenges with these fractures that I have. Thank you so much for keeping me in your thoughts and prayers. Jay from New York, you're on the air.
Hello, Eutrice. How are you today? I hope you're doing well. You sound beautiful as always.
Well, you're helping. Thank you.
Thank you. Two quick things. Number one, I disagree with you slightly in regards to what just happened in Atlanta. From my understanding, I may be wrong, and I know you will correct me, there was an infusion of close to $8 million by the Democrats to help that opponent, if I'm not mistaken.
$8 million, most of it came actually from regular people. The party itself did not donate $8 million.
Okay, so then you wouldn't classify that as the party, even though most of those members probably was of the Democratic Party, you would say?
Well, I'm talking about the Democratic Party's core administration.
Okay, I got you.
But, regular Democratic people, Democrats, regular Democrats lifted this campaign off the ground and kept it, you know, rising. The Democratic Party, the central Democratic Party administration, was just not at play here.
And you're referring to Perez and Ellison, which as I observe what they're doing, they're absolutely doing nothing. They have no plan. They have no agenda. And basically, like you've been saying since the beginning, that Perez was there to stop the Bernie movement, which honestly, in all truthfulness, is a joke movement if we really sit down and really look at it. But now my second point is in regards to Bill O'Reilly. I totally agree with you that the man wasn't fired at all. He was basically let go. More than likely, he is under the auspice of an LLC corporation to protect himself in certain manners. That's probably why he was able to assist in paying close to $9 million in settlements. Now, I will tell you what
actually it's $13 million.
Okay. Well, I thought he was responsible for only that. But I tell you what will happen to him, and I hope I'm wrong, but I figure this is what will happen. He will go to Sirius Radio and take his loyal clown listeners with him and make a lot more money on top of the money that Fox is already giving them. And when it's all said and done, you know, it'll be what it'll be. And maybe, now think about this. Also, he may join Roger Ailes and set up that second network like Fox, with supposedly if the clown in office didn't win, was going to do with Roger Ailes. So don't feel bad for Bill O'Reilly. Don't feel sorry for Bill O'Reilly, because he's a white man in a white man's country that deals with white privilege, and he's going to be all right.
That's what I'm not going to feel sorry, and I don't feel sorry, which is why I'm saying, to my mind, I'm holding the media responsible for not explaining what actually happened here. This was not a firing. But this was a mutual agreement to part ways, you know, for the parties to part ways. And they came up with some kind of a monetary settlement to induce, in fact, a settlement. And that's what this is. Bill O'Reilly, he'll survive. He's making, $25 million a year? He'll do just fine.
You know something, Utrecht? Nobody in the media, I'm sorry to say this, but it is so truthful, never articulates and explains to the public what you just said. And black media, all they try to do is make it seem as though they achieved some sort of victory in regards to he's no longer on air, but the systemic problems still continue and persist. And I just like to thank you, because you're the only one out of the media who will ever say that he wasn't fired and be able to articulate why he wasn't fired. And that's why I've loved you for all these years, and I thank you. Hotep, sister.
Well, thank you, Jay. You just made my day. Now, I could be wrong. I made that very clear. I could be wrong on all of this, but my experience tells me this is probably how this whole thing was resolved. And the media will, they're doing their job. They're satisfying the public's need to know that a man was being punished for doing bad things to women. That's one angle of the story. The other angle of the story is that Fox News is being resolute, having gone through a very nasty bout with the actions of Roger Ailes, and they don't want a repeat of it, so they are self-correcting now. And with regard to Bill O'Reilly, the idea is that, you know, here's this cocky guy who has finally gotten his comeuppance. This all works very well. This all works very well from a public relations point of view, because O'Reilly, when he enters his next phase of life, which of course will be about money, and he'll be secure in his next phase of life. That's a great story. He learned a good lesson, and he is now a responsible guy doing the right thing. Fox gets to report to its shareholders, which who didn't know about all this $13 million in settlements, quote unquote, that they have paid out. They never made that clear, which is, by the way, illegal. And life goes on. And there's this, for us, there's a story about the level of redemption, and it's race-based. There is a level of redemption automatically given to whites when they mess up this bad. And, you know, they have a future. They have a life. But others don't get to have this kind of charity given to them, or even the belief that even though they did a bad thing, it could be corrected and you can retrieve and redeem yourself. This is another lesson that we should observe. Thanks so much for your call. I'm going to say a couple of things here, and you would notice that many of the stories that we tackle, quite a bit of time would pass by, and then you would see, you know, a hint that somebody's looking at the same thing. This has happened to me all my life in media and journalism. We'd be way, way ahead of the mainstream because we think, and we apply the knowledge that we have to what we are covering as journalists. That was how I trained people in my journalism training program. The secret to really good and effective writing is good and effective thinking. If you can't think right, please don't enter the field of journalism. It requires you to think. It requires you to get an understanding of how things work, so that you in turn can intelligently report. And I'm speaking to you, recognizing you as journalists. When we talk to each other in our Free Your Mind Friday sessions or in any session, I'm looking for evidence that you're thinking and applying what you've learned to what you're thinking. That's the whole sense of satisfaction that I get of interrelating with the audience. You're thinking. You don't have to be right. There's no such thing. What I want to see is the effort at putting together things that allow you to see a whole different dimension to an issue, a whole different dimension to it that you normally would not have if you just submitted yourself for instruction by media totally engaged in propaganda. This helps you to survive. This helps you to make sense of the universe that you're in. And this helps us all to be far more intelligent in the way we approach life. Thanks so much for listening. Stay tuned. What's coming up is great, great programming. You don't want to miss the program. It's Expanding Mind with Eric Davis. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. A pleasure and a great privilege always to be in your company. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.